Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Wednesday, middle of the first week of Advent, December 3rd, 2025. Hope you're having a great day so far. And this is a feast of St. Francis Xavier, of course, one of the founders of the Jesuits and a great preacher and teacher and missionary, especially to areas of the Far East. St. Francis Xavier, pray for us. Coming up this morning, we have so much to talk about, and I'm very excited to continue a conversation that we've been having, actually since Monday, all about Advent and the ways to make the most of Advent. So today, we're going to be joined by the one, the only, Father Michael Schmitz from Ascension Press, the Diocese of Duluth. He has a brand new series that is very accessible called Waiting Well, Advent with Father Mike. So looking forward to chatting with him. Isn't it a great title? Because if you think about it, many of us, myself included, we don't wait very well, do we? Think about it, really. Because we're in a rush, we want to get things done, you know, we just want to move on to the next assignment we have, or whatever our next goal may be, or the next project we're working on. But as Father Mike beautifully explains in the series, there are reasons that the Church and the Lord gives us these periods of waiting. They're very important for our own spiritual growth. So looking forward to chatting with Father Mike for one segment this morning and about 16 minutes past the hour, past the news and the weather. And then we are going to do two segments with my dear sister, Joan Lewis, Joan's Rome, of course. We have so much to talk about. I don't know how many of you heard or watched the wonderful press briefing on the papal plane on the way home to Rome from Lebanon yesterday with the Holy Father. It was great. It was very diverse. I mean, there were reporters from Lebanon and Italy and Germany. And of course, being so fluid in so many languages, it was fascinating to watch and to listen to it. But he also, of course, spoke in English and gave a great response about his own journey in realizing at what point during the conclave earlier this year that there was a possibility that he could be Pope. He was also asked about his own spirituality, and he gave a recommendation for a book. So we'll talk about that. But it really was delightful. And it was just a very, I think, friendly and down-to-earth press conference. But he was also very, I think, direct in his words, especially about the number of topics they discussed that are very serious, including, of course, the Middle East and the situation with Russia and Ukraine and other topics as well. So we'll talk about that. And then also take a closer look at what's happening in Italy. Normally, I have Shrines and Wonders Wednesdays at the bottom of the hour based on my EWTM book, Italy Shrines and Wonders. And we'll tie that in because this week in Italy, they are really starting to have their experiences for Advent and for their Christmas markets, and they're very festive. What's so beautiful about things here is that they're very Christ-centered. And if we have time, we'll mention a few of the special places, including, I think, one of the most important for pilgrims to visit while they're here is the town of Greccio, where St. Francis established the first nativity. But if we don't get to it today, we have several weeks. And I also did a really cool blog. If you're interested in finding more out about Advent in Italy, you can find it at my Facebook page at Mrs. Teresa Tomeo. And also you can sign up free for my e-newsletter. And the blog went out this morning all about some of the activities that are happening here. So again, we have two segments with Joan Lewis, one segment with Father Mike Schmitz, and then we also have the news and the weather. But let's start right now with the weather, because snow is happening in a number of different places. As a matter of fact, the National Weather Service is calling for heavy snow in the central southern Rockies and below average temps in the central and eastern part of the U.S. And my home area of southeastern Michigan, it's brutally cold. I think it's in the 20s, which is not normal. We normally don't get there until January, February. So it's very cold in parts of the Midwest. But officially, the weather forecast, the National Weather Service is saying moderate to heavy snowfall expected in the central southern Rockies and adjacent high plains today. Lake-enhanced snowfall expected downwind of the Great Lakes. Showers and thunderstorms, meanwhile, are possible tonight into this evening across the western Gulf Coast states. And then temperatures across much of the central and eastern area will remain below average and chilly to the end of the week. So that's our forecast for this morning on a Wednesday. It's December 3rd, the first week of Advent. Do hope you're doing well. We appreciate your listenership here on EWTN. Let's get started at 4 minutes past the hour and see what's happening here on EWTN Radio. Well, as we mentioned, the Pope is back in Rome, and we'll discuss this more with Joan Lewis a little bit later on in the program, this after his first overseas trip since being elected pontiff. Reporter Claudia Lavagna explaining that on his last day in Lebanon yesterday, the Pope also celebrated a major mass at the Beirut waterfront, attended by thousands of Catholics.
Earlier in the day, he visited the site of the massive explosion in 2020, which killed more than 200 people and injured thousands more, and he offered a silent prayer there.
The Pope's six-day trip also took him, of course, to Turkey. Now, following an official farewell ceremony at Beirut's International Airport last night, the Holy Father again concluding his apostolic journey to both Turkey and Lebanon yesterday, highlighting a vision of fraternity and peace for the entire region. Bringing his six-day apostolic visit to a close, the Pope said, "We hope to involve the entire Middle East in the spirit of fraternity and commitment to peace, including those who currently consider themselves enemies." This, he said, as he brought again his trip to a close. Now, calling for an end to hostilities, he said, "We must recognize that armed struggles bring no benefit. While weapons are lethal, negotiation, mediation, and dialogue are constructive. Let us choose peace," he said, "as a way, not just as a goal." The Pope further invoking, as Vatican News explained, the words of St. John Paul II, "Lebanon is more than a country. It is a message." And as Jim Roop tells us, the Holy Father is also urging President Trump not to attempt to overthrow Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro with military action.
Pope Leo says it would be better to try dialogue or economic pressure if the Trump administration wants change in the South American country. This as tensions are rising between the U.S. and Venezuela, with Trump declaring over the weekend that the airspace above and surrounding the nation is closed because, quote, "Venezuela is not a very friendly country," end quote. The Pope made the comments on a flight back from his first overseas trip since being elected pontiff, where he visited Turkey and Lebanon. I'm Jim Roop.
In other news this morning, the University of Colorado, according to a report in Catholic News Agency this morning, their medical school paying out a massive eight-figure settlement after it required multiple staffers, including a Catholic doctor, to obtain the COVID-19 vaccination. The Thomas More Society says the school agreed to pay more than 10 attorney's fees to some 18 plaintiffs who were named in that lawsuit. The legal group saying earlier this week that the plaintiffs have been denied religious accommodations to mandatory COVID-19 vaccinations. The suit, by the way, had been active for some 5 years. And Republican Matt Van Epps is projected to win a special House election in Tennessee. Speaking last night, he credited the president for his win.
"To President Donald J. Trump, thank you, sir. Your endorsement made the difference, and I will never forget it."
He beat Democrat Afton Bain, dashing hopes of a blue wave after the Democrats did have some wins in the November elections. The result boosts the GOP majority in the House to 220 to 213. The man accused of killing one National Guard member and injuring another in a shooting in D.C. has been formally charged now with murder. He appeared virtually before a judge on Tuesday from a hospital bed where he's recovering from gunshot wounds suffered during the incident last week. He was seen covered in a blanket lying down in the bed during the appearance. He's also charged with assault with the intent to kill and possession of a firearm during a crime of violence. He pleaded not guilty to all the charges. A Kremlin spokesperson says Russia-U.S. talks on a Ukraine peace deal have now ended without a breakthrough. Negotiations went on for 5 hours yesterday between Russian leader Vladimir Putin and his aides and the U.S. team of special envoy Steve Witkoff and a Trump advisor named Jared Kushner. An aide to Putin saying the talks in Moscow were very useful, but a compromise was not found. He added the work will continue. The U.S. team has not yet commented on the discussions, which are aimed at ending the 3.5-year war between Ukraine and Russia. And Mark Mayfield tells us President Trump is announcing Trump Accounts, a saving initiative for America's children.
Trump says every American child born during his second term will receive a $1,000 government deposit to help start their account. Dell Technologies founder and CEO Michael Dell and his wife Susan joined the president for the announcement to talk about the $6.52 billion donation that they are making to the program. Financial experts say that Trump's accounts amount basically to an IRA for kids. The accounts were established through the passage of Trump's Big Beautiful Bill, signed into law in July. I'm Mark Mayfield.
The FBI investigating an apparent attack on a federal immigration agent in San Antonio. They say an envelope containing a suspicious powder was mailed to an ICE investigations office. The building was then evacuated due to an abundance of caution, an ICE spokesperson calling it a blatant attempt to disrupt ICE operations and endanger the personnel there. And two men who attended a child's birthday party that became the site of a deadly mass shooting in Stockton are now in custody. Daniel Martindale has more from
California. The California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation says the two men in their 20s are accused of violating their parole. Both men are in San Joaquin County Jail, but are not considered shooters in the deadly incident. One of the men was previously found guilty of carrying a loaded firearm in public while being an active gang member. The other man did prison time for abusing and endangering the health of a child and for corporal injury on a person resulting in a traumatic condition. Saturday night's shooting at a banquet hall left four people dead, including three children, and wounded 11 others. I'm Daniel Martindale.
Meanwhile, Michael Tubbs, who served as the mayor of Stockton, California from 2017 to 2021, is now speaking out about the tragic weekend shootings that again left four dead and 11 others hurt at a child's birthday party. He says the city needs a full-scale intervention.
We know that in the state, but particularly in Stockton, we have a problem with gangs, groups, sets, cliques of disconnected, disenfranchised young men. Oftentimes choose to live lives of violence that have impacts on the entire community.
He says there needs to be strategies employed to make sure the community is safe. He also was running for lieutenant governor in next year's primary. Charges against a Northern California mall shooter are up in the air. Meanwhile, potential charges against a 17-year-old arrested for a triple shooting at the Valley Fair Mall are very broad, including being charged as an adult.
The options in terms of time are anywhere from the rest of his life in adult prison to, you know, a couple months at the juvenile ranch or at the juvenile hall.
That's Santa Clara County's District Attorney Jeff Rosen. The shooting happened on Black Friday and stemmed from a conflict between two groups. One of the victims is believed to be a rival gang member, along with two innocent bystanders. A suspect, already on probation, was arrested late Sunday, as well as a woman who assisted in his escape. Charges are expected to be filed sometime today. Michael Kastner tells us about a new study showing some negative mental health impacts that a smartphone can have on preteens.
The American Academy of Pediatrics finds preteens who own a smartphone and use it regularly are at greater risk of depression, obesity, and insufficient sleep. The preteens had a 31% greater chance of suffering from depression and 62% greater chance of struggling with their sleep. The study looked at 10,000 children, comparing those who had a smartphone before age 12 and those who got their first phone when they were older. I'm Michael Kastner.
YouTube says the upcoming social media ban in Australia will make children less safe. On December 10th, Australia will become the first country in the world to ban children under the age of 16 from using platforms, including YouTube, as well as TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. The Australian government says it's protecting children from predatory algorithms. Under the ban, Australian children will still be able to visit YouTube, but without an account. A YouTube spokesperson says users without an account will lose access to the platform's safety filters and well-being settings, and they claim that will make Australian children less safe. It is a Wednesday morning. It's December 3rd, 2025. Hope you are doing well this first week of Advent, and we're excited because we have someone who's going to help us not just get through Advent, but make the most of it. He really doesn't need any introduction, but we will be chatting with him for a good 10 minutes when we return. And we're going to talk about a new series from Ascension Press that you can download, very easy to access, from our friend Father Michael Schmitz. He's coming up on his Waiting Well Advent with Father Mike series. Stay tuned. Love the title of this series because it's something we actually don't do, which I'm assuming is the reason why the wonderful Father Mike Schmitz is with us this morning, is calling his wonderful Advent series Waiting Well Advent with Father Mike. So Father, good morning, happy Advent to you. Great to have you on the back on the show. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Teresa. It's really good to hear your voice.
Same here, my dear. So I watched the promo for the trailer for this series. I love the title because so many of us, and I include myself in this group, we don't wait well, do we?
Yeah. No. I think what we tend to do is I think we think of waiting wrong in the sense that we think of waiting as passive. I'm just, mm-hmm. yeah, just I'm biding my time until the thing I want is here, or I'm biding my time until the thing I hope for is here, or I'm biding my time. It's passive, as opposed to what waiting is meant to be, which is the opposite of passive.
I really liked what you said in the trailer about how the Lord and his church gives us these very specific times. You mentioned Lent, and now you're mentioning, obviously, in this series, Advent, that there is a purpose for these time periods, right?
Yeah, well, you know, last year we did a series, and the series was during Advent. It was called Face to Face. And it was the idea that the church gives us Advent as time of preparation. So it talks about the three comings of Christ. We prepare to either celebrate the anniversary of the coming of Jesus into this world as a baby. We prepare to receive him now as he comes in to us, comes to us now. And we also prepare to see him at the end of time. And so last year we asked the question, what if I knew the end of the world was happening on December 25th? What if I knew that I would wake up dead on December 25th and I knew that I was going to see God face to face? How would I live Advent differently? Because it's a time of preparation. And this is something similar, because again, waiting is not passive. Waiting is preparation. Waiting isn't, I'm just enduring this moment. Waiting well means I'm engaged in this moment, because I would say this, that when we learn how to wait well, we declare, as Christians, we declare something very powerful. And that is that I believe, I'm convinced, that God wants to and is doing something with this moment. It was not just, hey, let's get to the next moment. It's no, I'm declaring this statement of faith that God wants to and is doing something with the season I'm in now. He's doing something with the circumstances I'm in now. He's doing something with now. It's not just about later.
Amen to that. Talking with our friend, Father Mike Schmitz, of course, from so many different ministries, but his main ministry you can find at bulldogcatholic.com, from the Diocese of Duluth, working with the youth there in the college campus, but also with Ascension Press, and his Bible in a Year, his Catechism in a Year, and his wonderful series that he always does through Ascension. And Father, walk us through, because this one is even offering a journal that you can order, correct?
Yeah. Actually, I love this. There are three kind of platforms. One is your basic, everyone has this, you know, YouTube, Spotify, iTunes. You can listen to the five kind of crux moments of from the first Sunday of Advent all the way to Christmas. That's everywhere. It's out there. The second is we have on the Ascension app, there are daily video reflections every single day. And so you can here's just something to walk with you every day to remind us of, like, no, God is here. God's doing something. And the third, like you said, is a journal. And that kind of third, quote-unquote, platform of being able to get that out there and say, have something. Sometimes people like something in their hands. Like, I want something I can bring with me into prayer. I want something I can hold, I can write on, I can mark up. And so, yeah, we also have that daily journal with reflections and space to put down your own thoughts.
So even though we are in, it goes by so fast too, I think Advent should be longer, because I think we need to learn more patience. That's just at least I know I do anyway. But I just love the fact that you can join this anytime, even if it's, let's say, you haven't signed up for it yet, correct?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, here we are, we're 4 days, three or four days in. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, just like you said, it can go by so fast, but I think sometimes we disqualify ourselves when we say, well, I didn't start on day zero. I didn't start on day one, and therefore, maybe I'll wait till next year. Like, no, honestly, on Wednesday of the first week of Lent, you can pick it up. On Thursday of the first week of Lent, you can pick it up. And the reality, even this whole series is declaring nothing given to God is ever wasted. And so even if, like, it was only that last week of Advent I was able to really pray, like, great, nothing given to God is ever wasted. So it will not ever be a waste to be able to just start. And even if you can't do it, this is the thing. We sabotage ourselves sometimes when we say, if I can't do it perfectly, I can't do it at all. And that's not true.
God just wants a willing heart and an open heart, especially during these times of years when we can get so close to him. So everyone loves your work. Your series, they've gone through the roof in terms of numbers, of views and downloads, whether it's a Bible in a Year, whether it's Catechism in a Year. I mean, you're just a great preacher and teacher, and had such a benefit to be with you on so many occasions, including, of course, the Good News Cruise, and we'll be together, God willing, and gosh, it's not that far away. It's in February. It's like around the corner. But what do you do during these times, especially Advent? Because you're so, I mean, we're all busy, but you especially, Father, as a priest, someone who ministers, someone who's out there teaching online, what do you do to make Advent a special time for you?
You know, thank you for asking that, because a number of years ago, I also kind of came into this season with a thought of, I want to do it differently. And mm-hmm. and I came across the story of a man who, it's a longer story, so I'll skip his story and just say, I was convicted by this. I was convicted and I proposed to all of our students and everyone listening. I said, okay, we have 29 days. That year we had 29 days of Advent, the longest I think we might have. And I said, what about this? What if we just spent 29 minutes a day for the next 29 days in the presence of Jesus in the tabernacle, and just all we did was just be there and just say, Jesus, show your heart to me. Just, that's it. That's it. I'm not bringing in any extra resources. I'm not bringing in anything to read. I'm not bringing anything to work on. I'm just going into his presence and saying, Jesus, show your heart to me. That was the most transformative Advent of my life. Honestly, it was incredible. And so at the beginning of every Advent, I say, okay, Lord, that's what I want to do. I want to just park myself in front of you. I already have the daily, you know, our holy hour. We already have our liturgy of the hours and mass and stuff. But this is the thing that makes it unique for me. And I love it. It's a challenge because, you know, life doesn't slow down. But I know that it's a challenge that's worth even trying, even if I can't do it perfectly myself.
And also, I mean, if you can't get to, let's say, an Adoration Chapel, or if you can't get to a local church near you, maybe your work is just so consuming, or the kids in the morning, whatever, I think maybe getting up a little earlier, looking outside, spending time and just pondering, even if you can't, you know, be in front of Body, Blood, Soul, Divinity. I mean, there are ways to worship God and be with him alone without anything else by just praying and thinking about the incarnation, for example.
Yeah, we know God's present everywhere. You know, it's kind of funny. I had offered that challenge. You know, it was an invitation. It wasn't meant to be a challenge. It was an invitation to everyone who was, you know, joining us for Advent that year. And I was in Israel then, later on that same year, with a wife and mother who, she said, on that first Sunday of Advent, I was so mad at you because I thought, Father, I can't go to the church every day. I can't take the time to do that. And she said this, you know, because you're right. You're 100% correct in the sense that a person can pray anywhere, and to use that as the excuse of, well, I can't go to the church, therefore I can't pray, is wrong, obviously.
Right.
But she said, she's like, I was so mad, and then I was like, okay, I'm going to try it. And she's like, there were some days where I parked in the parking lot because the church was closed. But I was like, I just looked at the church as a giant tabernacle and was like, okay, that's where I'm going to be. I'm going to be here in my car in silence for 29 minutes because I know that Jesus is in there. But just like you said, Teresa, God is everywhere. And that sense of people listening right now, God is with you right now.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we forget that. Okay, I know that's true. But right now, with you at this moment, a closer than your own heartbeat, is the Savior of the world who loves you so much. And what's to stop us from praying now?
And he wants an open heart, and that willingness of that woman to go to the church, even though it was closed, and to sit there and just say, I know God's in there, so I'm going to sit here, I'm going to be silent, and I'm going to pray. Father, I wish we had more time, and I know you're super busy. Can't wait to see you on the cruise in February, which has long been sold out, but we're so excited to have you with us again. Father Michael Schmitz, ascensionpress.com is the link to get the new Advent series, Waiting Well. Check it out. Very easy to download. There's a journal that comes with it that you can order. Just great material from our dear friend Father Michael Schmitz, and we'll be right back with Joan Lewis on a Wednesday. Thanks for listening to EWTN. Joan had a great idea this morning. We were prepping for our Joan's Rome segment, as we always do. Wednesdays, we kind of do it all week long, back and forth with different, you know, topics that are coming up, because it's always so much to discuss. But she said to me this morning, is there any way I can come on for a little more time? And I said, absolutely, because I had spent this morning and part of last night in doing my research for the show today, watching the entire press conference on the plane, reading the Holy Father's beautiful talk to the young people, listening to his message at the airport. So I was just so excited about everything that was happening and the beautiful, successful trip that it was. Not to mention, of course, in the season of Advent in Italy and all kinds of good stuff about which we are about to speak with my dear friend Joan Lewis. So, okay, what do you want to start with? Because there's so much great stuff to discuss this morning, and thanks for joining us.
I mean, you could literally parse every single talk that he gave. But I think that for us to react to the trip, the best thing would be to look at what the Pope said on the plane. But there are two things I do want to start off with. One, I don't know if you know this, but if you saw pictures of the Pope on the plane to Turkey, he did receive a pumpkin pie from two of the journalists, but he also received a pecan pie that was made by our beloved Jesse at Home Baked.
Really?
Because there was a journalist on the plane, I won't mention names or anything else, there was a journalist who comes to Home Baked and knows that every Thanksgiving time Jesse is making turkey dinners, and he made 90 pies this year. And so the journalist said he would be leaving, you know, on the paper plane for the trip. Could Jesse possibly make a pecan pie? Well, of course they did. And there was a picture of it on the plane, and they did put it on their website. So just kind of a cute little, you know, thing, because it does involve somebody that you and I know and maybe a whole bunch of our listeners know as well.
That place is amazing. Tell our listeners, if they're not familiar, Joan, with Home Baked in Rome, which is very close to the Vatican, literally right down the street from your beautiful home. Tell us about that restaurant.
Well, Jesse opened it. It's more than 10 years now. This is the second one that Jesse from Buffalo, New York, and his Roman-born wife, Carolina, they have two sons and who are teens. Anyway, they opened this one on Cava Leggeri in 2019. And what it is, it's open from 8 to 4. It's everything you could possibly want for breakfast or lunch. You know, breakfast, you name it, it's on their menu. And then lunches, salads and wraps and sandwiches and quesadillas and catering to all kinds of tastes. But they're just the totally most delightful couple. Really down-to-earth, wonderful, good people. And you'll find Swiss guards there. You'll find members of the media. You will find lots of young people from the Rome universities and, of course, the seminarians from the North American College. So it's a place you go to, love, feel at home. You can go for a cup of coffee or the, you know, full works breakfast, and you're going to feel right at home. And by the way, Jesse did make cupcakes for Pope Francis. I don't think that was ever, you know, there was some event in the Vatican, somebody who frequented Home Baked asked Jesse if he could make a dozen, and you know, a couple hours later, they were at the Santa Marta residence. So,
well, I hope he's got some pictures of the Pope getting the pecan pie and put on the wall. That would be really cool. I wonder if he.
I've seen the video. I'll look for the Vatican pictures, because I saw the Pope with the pecan pie in his hand, standing in the aisle. So you're right. We'll try and get that for Jesse and Carolina. But anyway, so you had a wonderful, you know, plane ride over, but the plane ride back. I think you could tell, and if maybe I'll put a link up. I've been without internet for several days, so I couldn't post some things on my, I couldn't post anything on my blog. Anyway, I will make sure that I post a link to the video. And in fact, I think it's on the Vatican website, so vaticannews.va, because folks, it is definitely worth listening to the full video. And you know, Teresa, I don't know about you, but my favorite parts were, there were questions about the international, you know, events in Ukraine, Russia, Venezuela, and so many things. Very important what he said. But it was Cindy Wooden, who, the retiring American correspondent for Catholic News Service. She's been here, I think, almost 20 years, or maybe it is 20. Anyway, she said, reminded the Holy Father a couple of months ago, he said there was a learning curve to being Pope. And she wanted to understand that a little more. And this is so funny. She said, when you arrived at Harissa, Our Lady of Lebanon, this beautiful statue of Harissa, and folks, I want you to know I climbed to the top. she said, it looked like you said, wow. And so, In answering her, though, he said he wasn't really sure if he said wow or not, but He said that, yeah, there was a learning curve, but in the conclave, he mentioned that he wouldn't talk about anything he couldn't talk about. But he said when he could see the direction that the that things were going, that he just put everything in the Lord's hand. And the Lord's hand and heart and everything else, because that's basically what he's been doing since he discovered a book. I'm trying to find the name of it. Practice Being in the Presence of Christ, I think it was called. Oh, yeah, here we are. And he said it's a book which tells you how prayer and spirituality, where one simply gives one's life to the Lord and mm-hmm. allows the Lord to lead.
Yeah, I actually downloaded it. Alatea had a really good article on it this morning, talking about the book, and they dove into it a little bit more deeply. So I downloaded it. And can you imagine how many sales it's going to have now on Amazon?
If
they can't find it for free.
I haven't been able to do anything like download. So now that about 2 hours ago I got everything fixed, I will try and do that as well. But it's been, he said, if you want to know something about me, this idea of simply giving one's life to the Lord and allowing the Lord to lead, he said, mm-hmm. that's been my spirituality for many years. And he talked about the tough times living in Peru. He lived during years of terrorism. I don't think I knew that. He said, being called to service in places I never thought I'd be called to, I trust in God, and that message is something I share with all people. And as to the conclave, I resigned myself to the fact that when I saw how things were going, I said, this could be a reality. I took a deep breath, and I said, here we go, Lord. You're in charge. You lead the way. And
I love that.
Teresa, knowing you as a friend, and I think you know enough about me, I think both of us take that path as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've put our lives in the Lord's hands, and said, maybe not those words, you're in charge, but we said it in our own way. And if mm-hmm. you entrust him, it's absolutely amazing how things can change.
Yep.
I know it's certainly been my spirituality, but and then the one thing I loved, and I laughed out loud when I heard this.
But hold on, because we're going to get cut off by the music. The satellite music is going to start. Musical chairs start any second. So I just want to let folks know now that the Joan's internet is working. She'll have a lot more information on her blog, to make sure you check that out. We're going to continue the conversation when we come back, because there's so many other great points that the Pope made, not only on the papal plane, but also I loved his talk, Joni, and we can discuss this when we come back. I loved his talk to the young people. I thought it was very, even though it wasn't typically an Advent talk, it was meant to obviously inspire them in their situation, but there were so many messages in that talk that we can apply to Advent. So we'll continue the discussion, some extra time this morning with Jones Lewis and Jones Rome on a Wednesday. We'll be right back. So grateful to have Joan Lewis with us for an extra segment, joining us at 30 minutes past the hour, or actually 25 minutes past the hour, as opposed to right now, when she usually starts, because there's so much great material that we need to review. Continuing to glean from the beautiful messages of the Holy Father on the papal plane and many of his talks while he was in Turkey and Lebanon. There were some funny moments on the papal plane, too. I know you wanted to mention some of them. I didn't want you to get interrupted by the music in the middle of the story. So go ahead. The floor is yours, my dear.
Well, when Cindy Wooden, the American journalist, had said, you know, Holy Father, it seemed to us that you said, wow, when you got to the shrine of Our Lady of Harissa. And his answer was, I don't know that I said wow last night, in the sense my face is very expressive. But so he already knows this. He said, I'm sometimes amused by how the journalists interpret my face. I mean, it's interesting. Sometimes I get, you know, like really great ideas from all of you, because you think you can read my mind or my face. And it's not, well, you're not always correct. But Teresa, I for sure you and I, anybody listening to us that watches the Holy Father on TV, much less a picture, I'm talking about, you know, TV and movement, you have to watch his face. It's like you do know when he's moved or excited or spiritually overwhelmed by something. It's really, really wonderful. And I think that is a great thing that he knows that about himself. But you know what that also tells us, Teresa? The fact that he says those words, you know, you look at my face and sometimes you're wrong interpreting things. This means he gets online. He reads articles. He's up mm-hmm. to date on things. How's he going to know what journalists say or think unless he reads it?
Right.
So I think that's a very important thing that the Holy Father doesn't know he told us in that statement. But if mm-hmm. you let me digress for just a minute, I certainly hope that our our listeners did see the lady, did see Our Lady of Harissa. The statue is absolutely magnificent. And when I was there for the first time, I went and visited Gabriele Conte, who was the nuncio in Lebanon, when I visited him. And he showed me, you know, through the offices. Then we went outside into the garden, and I walked about 50 or 80 feet, and all of a sudden I'm looking at the statue of Our Lady of Harissa, but from the back. And I could see all this construction work going up, and I have pictures of it, but it's what is now the shrine where the Holy Father and bishops and everybody met at Our Lady of... But anyway, this lady, this statue is, by the way, a very popular destination for Muslims because they have a special place in their heart for Mary.
They
if
do.
Nobody mm-hmm. if mm-hmm. yeah knew this because they
well,
have
she's
a great
in the Quran,
devotion
so,
to
yeah.
Mary. Mm-hmm. She's the mother of Jesus, who for Muslims is just a prophet. But I can remember being at one event, September 1995 at the UN Conference on Women in Beijing, when on Our Lady's September 8th birthday, the head of the Iranian delegation brought a beautiful poster of Mary to our office. And that was a lovely gesture that delighted us. But here's what happened to me. Okay, so I'm going up this huge winding stairway to get to the top, just where you could, like, touch the foot of Our Lady. And I was trying to take one... Oh, I can see myself doing this. I was trying to take one photo, and I was bending backward over the railing that circled up and around the stairway. And a young man said to me in accented English, "Did I need help?" And, of course, I'm sure... that he was sure I was about to fall over the railing and needed help. So he took the picture that I wanted, and then the three of us, because his mother was there, we spoke for a few minutes. He said his name was Fadi, and he introduced his mother, mentioning they were Lebanese Muslims devoted to Mary. And they tell me the story then. So Fadi's mother, after years of trying without success to have a child, she made a journey to Our Lady of Harissa. She did some serious praying there, and 4 days later only found out she was pregnant. And so Fadi and his mother visit the shrine every year on his birthday. So I've got wonderful pictures of them, and that's such an amazing story because I learned at the time, oh, there were a lot of Muslim women the day I went there. I learned at the time that she is known, if you, you know, are trying to have a child and can't, that this is the Mary that the Muslims pray to, you know. So what a beautiful,
right.
What a beautiful thing to know. And like you and I even said, I think it was last week as the Pope was about to leave for Turkey, that even the word Arab, there can be Arab Catholics. It isn't that every word is, you know, synonymous mm-hmm. with the Islamic faith. But, you know, I want to go back for a minute to, I think, the words that describe, that best describe the Holy Father's trip. They were part of every single one of his messages, including the beautiful one to young people. I think the key words to describe this trip to both countries would be peace, unity, communion. And then when he was talking even more to Christians and certainly to young people, Jesus, you know, put Jesus at the center, make him the fulcrum of your life. And how many times, Teresa, did he say he wanted to be a messenger of peace, a messenger of unity? And I think it's so important to know that, and I think you could tell when people applauded. Certainly in Lebanon, oh my gosh, some of his talks were interrupted how many times by applause.
Mm-hmm.
When he mentioned peace, when he mentioned Jesus, when he mentioned unity, and he was talking even in the situations, the countries regarding the war, and in the situations, the international situations that he was talking about, you know, he said weapons do nothing but destroy, but he said dialogue, right, understanding, communion, being together, relationships, etc., these do not destroy anything, but, you know, can certainly lead to peace. So I think there's going to be reverberations for a long time to come. People will be pondering and writing about the visit and certainly some of the talks that he gave. And I was at the same place, Bukirke, where he met the young people. I was there, and I just not 20 minutes ago looked at the pictures I took of Pope Benedict talking to young people at that same spot. Yeah. So every place that he...
Well, it was incredible, I think, for me. I really enjoyed his talk to the young people, because even though it was geared toward the young people, there were so many things that we as adult Catholics could glean from that presentation. It was so powerful, where he talked about, you know, not being alone, not being isolated. He talked about opening yourselves up and talked about being it was just really, I thought, beautiful. And he also talked about listening to God in the silence, which is a perfect message for Advent.
Yes. And you know, the Pope said, talking about the young people, he was at a jubilee for youth. That was back in Rome, where there were over 1 million people. Last night, the young people, it was a small crowd by comparison, of course, but it was still a huge crowd for a country like Lebanon. Mm-hmm. And the Pope said, it's always marvelous to me. I think to myself, these people are here because they want to see the Pope. But then I say to myself, they're here because they want to see Jesus.
They want
Christ
to see Jesus.
And they want to see a messenger of peace. And so for the young people, he said, just to listen to their enthusiasm, to hear their response to that message is something, I think, he said, that enthusiasm is awe-inspiring. This is a Pope saying this. This is Pope Leo. I just hope I never get tired of appreciating all that these young people are doing. And again, his face says it all, Teresa. When he's with the young people, he goes, you know, from his face expressing the words I just read, the young people transmitting their enthusiasm and love to him. And then you move to a liturgical scene, and the spirituality of the Holy Father shines through in a moment like that as well. So it's not a bad thing to watch his face and get an idea of what he's feeling. But I felt joy. Did you feel that throughout this trip?
Yes. Felt joy and hope. I think hope, because some of us, you know, you're American. I know you live in Italy, but I think some of us can't relate to the war-torn areas of the world unless we've been there. You've been there. You know, I've been there. But we've been there, but we don't live there. There's a little bit of a difference. And so he, I think, really... hit the nail on the head in terms of talking to them about their reality. That's what also came through, realizing that they don't live in a place like where he was from, the United States of America, where, yeah, we have white martyrdom, and yes, we have violence on the streets, unfortunately, but it's different. We don't have, we're not always war-torn physically and seeing bombs going overhead and listening to that all the time. So that's a very different atmosphere in which to live, situation in which to live, and I think he expressed that and tried to relate to them.
Well, and the importance, too, of the fact that, believe me, he's like John Paul. Believe me, he realizes the importance of the media. John Paul, when he was a simple priest, knew the importance of communication and of the media. And there were 81 journalists on the plane from, I don't know the total number of countries, but he knew full well that even if he just said good morning in Arabic, oh, and by the way, his French was beautiful on this trip, and then he spoke Turkish, you know, when he addressed the soldiers greeting him in Turkey. But he knows the power of the media, so that a lot of the messages he was giving in person in the country of Turkish people, in Lebanon, the home of Lebanese, that his words were going to be heard, felt, and read many, many times over. all throughout the world. Mm-hmm. So
I love, though, and you alluded to this earlier, but I love the fact that he told the reporters, "You can't read my mind."
Yeah, right.
He says, "I'm shocked when I look at the papers and I see what you guys say about me." That was really funny. I thought that was, you know, a nice little jab, a nice jab, a Christian jab.
Oh, sure. But we have a media savvy Pope himself.
Right.
You know, he's not waiting for somebody to come over and give him the morning paper summary. They may do that, but we always had the summary of world news media reporting on Vatican events. That would always be brought to a Pope in the morning. But I mean, he can get online himself. And so he knows what countries are saying. Oh, and he did tell us, by the way, that he is having talks. He didn't mention any particular names, but as far as Venezuela goes, I think he said he's been talking with the nuncio there because they would like the bishops to lead some kind of to do something to calm the situation. I think that was his words that you and then, you know, Russia, he's undoubtedly speaking to world leaders and obviously not going to say what is being said. That would not get him another conversation with the world leader. So sounds like a very savvy diplomatic man, as well as of an enormous, wonderful spirituality. And
I think it was a great week, and it was great for the world to see the Catholic faith and so many young people excited about it, especially in parts of the world where we're living is difficult. Joni, we're out of time. I can't believe it, but at least we were able to get you on for
Yay!
An extra segment. Thank you for the suggestion, and whenever there's a lot of news, we'll try to do that again. Of course, our very own Joan Lewis, Joan's Rome. Check out her really beautiful blog, Joan's Rome at WordPress.com. She joins us every Wednesday to talk about the Pope and the Vatican and things going on in the Eternal City related to the one holy Catholic and apostolic faith. So we always appreciate her great work, Joan's Rome. And we'll be right back to let you know what's coming up on hour number two. It is a Wednesday morning, and you're listening to the one, the only EWTN Global Catholic Radio. Happy Advent. We're in the middle of the first week of Advent. A beautiful time. Almost 55 minutes past the hour on a Wednesday, December 3rd, 2025. Great to be with you on a Wednesday and every day here at Catholic Connection, produced by EWTN out of Irondale, Alabama. Coming up in the second hour on EWTN's Radio Extra, we are going to be talking about, well, in two cents, taking a look at miracles in the sense of the gospel today. I don't know how many of you have ever heard, heaven forbid, and drives me crazy when I hear this, priest or deacon claiming that the multiplication of the loaves and fishes, well, it really wasn't a miracle. It was more like just a sharing. You know, they brought out the pita bread and the tabbouleh and the hummus. They just sat around and shared everything they had. Seriously? We'll talk about that. And we'll pick a little bit out of what the Holy Father said about surrendering to God, because that really is tied into the miracle aspect of our faith. If we don't believe in miracles, then how can we believe in the Eucharist? How can we believe that common bread becomes a body and blood of the Omnipotent One? And so we'll take a look at that. And then we're also going to be chatting with the amazing Abby Johnson, of course, who walked away from Planned Parenthood and turned into one of our greatest pro-life leaders of our time. She's going to be joining us. Beautiful effort that they do at her ministry, and then there were none, reaching out to workers in abortion mills by sending them Christmas cards, but not just any Christmas cards from Catholic sisters, as in religious sisters. So we'll talk about that with Abby Johnson on a Wednesday. Again, I do hope you can tune in to EWTN Radio Extra. And check out our great Advent resources. In addition, of course, to Father Mike, don't forget EWTN.com/radio, then go to schedules and see all of our great radio programming for Advent. Stay tuned. More Catholic Connection coming your way.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
It is a Wednesday morning here on EWTN's Radio Extra. It's December 3rd, 2025. Wonderful to be with you on a Wednesday and every day. We have a great show lined up for you the second hour as well. In the 2 cent segment, I wanted to discuss a little bit the gospel for today and how, unfortunately, many people, even those who preach, such as deacons, of course, and pastors, bishops, even priests, of course, in local parishes, try to take this gospel and make it sound as if it was nothing more than a big picnic. Many people have heard that type of homily, and I want to take a look at that. Steve Ray has a funny story on that, too, and I'll share his story about it. He's not joining us, but he has a funny story about how shortly after he converted, he was speaking somewhere, and he and his wife, Janet, went to a mass at a strange parish because they just went to one out of town, and the priest did the number on the whole gospel, and he it took him all kinds of patience and everything not to get up and disrupt the mass. He didn't want to disrupt the mass, obviously, but he was so upset. But I think it's important for us to really think about this. How do we feel when we hear about the miracles of God? How do we feel when we read them in Scripture? Do we really embrace them? Do we really believe that this happened? Because the church has declared that these are actual miracles. So why some say it's not? Perhaps it's their own faith journey. I don't know. But we'll take a look at that from an apologetic standpoint. And we'll also take a look at that from the perspective of what the Holy Father was saying. Part of what he was saying, which we discussed with Joan Lewis a little bit earlier, when he was talking about turning things over to God, that surrender, that moment of surrender when you realize God is God, we are not, and that we have to understand that and accept that, that idea of total surrender and putting our lives in the hand of God. Okay, so we'll discuss in 2 cents. And then, as I mentioned previously, we are going to have, I'm sure, a very powerful conversation with our friend and sister in the pro-life movement, Abby Johnson from And Then There Were None. And she's the author of the book Unplanned. We're going to be talking about a beautiful effort, Catholic nuns sending Christmas cards to abortion facilitators. And we'll also talk about some abortion extremes that are going on in Canada and around the world. So that is our program for a Wednesday morning, the second hour of Catholic Connection, December 3rd, 2025. And of course, we have the news and the weather for you. So let's get right to the weather because there's a lot of snow in the forecast. The National Weather Service is saying that we're going to have moderate to heavy snowfall. It's expected in the central southern Rockies and adjacent to the high plains, and that starts today. Lake-enhanced snowfall is expected downwind to the Great Lakes. Showers and thunderstorms will be possible tonight into this evening across western Gulf Coast states. And then temperatures across much of the central and eastern part of the country remain below average and chilly to the end of the week. So that's a look at the forecast for today on a Wednesday across the U.S. of A. Hope it's going well for you. Right now, at almost 4 minutes past the hour, though, we need to check the news here on a Wednesday and see what's happening on EWTN's Radio Extra. Pope Leo back in Rome after his first overseas trip since being elected pontiff. Reporter Claudio Lavagna explains, on his last day in Lebanon yesterday, Pope Leo was celebrating a mass at the Beirut waterfront attended by thousands of Catholics.
Earlier in the day, he visited the site of the massive explosion in 2020, which killed more than 200 people and injured thousands more, and he offered a silent prayer there.
The Pope's six-day trip, of course, also taking him to Turkey. Now, following an official farewell ceremony at Beirut's international airport yesterday, the Holy Father concluded the apostolic journey and to Turkey and Lebanon, highlighting a vision of fraternity and peace for the entire region. Bringing his six-day apostolic visit to a close, he said, "We hope to involve the entire Middle East in the spirit of fraternity and commitment to peace, including those who currently consider themselves enemies." Calling for an end to hostilities, he said, "We must recognize that armed struggles bring no benefit. While weapons are lethal, negotiation, mediation, and dialogue are constructive." He added, "Let us all choose peace as a way, not just as a goal." The Pope further invoking the words of St. John Paul II, "Lebanon is more than a country. It's a message." And as Jim Roop tells us, the Holy Father is now urging President Donald Trump not to attempt to overthrow Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro with military action.
Pope Leo says it would be better to try dialogue or economic pressure if the Trump administration wants change in the South American country. This as tensions are rising between the U.S. and Venezuela, with Trump declaring over the weekend that the airspace above and surrounding the nation is closed because, quote, "Venezuela is not a very friendly country," end quote. The Pope made the comments on a flight back from his first overseas trip since being elected pontiff, where he visited Turkey and Lebanon. I'm Jim Roop.
The University of Colorado, according to a report in Catholic News Agency and the National Catholic Register today, the medical school will pay out a massive eight-figure settlement after it required multiple staffers, including a Catholic doctor, to obtain the COVID-19 vaccination. The Thomas More Society is saying the University School of Medicine agreed to pay more than $10.3 million in damages, tuition, and attorney's fees to 18 plaintiffs in that lawsuit. CNA also reporting the legal group saying in a December 1st release earlier this week, the plaintiffs had been denied religious accommodation to mandatory COVID-19 vaccinations. The suit has been active for nearly 5 years. And Republican Matt Van Epps is projected to win that special House election in Tennessee. Speaking last night, he credited the president for his big victory.
To President Donald J. Trump, thank you, sir. Your endorsement made the difference, and I will never forget it.
He beat Democrat Afton Bain, dashing hopes of a blue wave after some Democratic wins in the November election. The result does boost the GOP majority in the House to 220 to 213. And the man accused of killing one National Guard member and hurting another in a shooting in Washington, D.C. has been formally charged with murder. Ramnahula Lanawa appeared virtually before a judge on Tuesday from a hospital bed where he's recovering from gunshot wounds suffering during the incident last week. He was seen covered in a blanket lying down in the bed during the appearance. He's also charged with assault with the intent to kill and possession of a firearm during a crime of violence. He pleaded not guilty to those charges. A Kremlin spokesperson says Russia-U.S. talks on Ukraine's peace deal have ended without a breakthrough. Negotiations went on for 5 hours yesterday between Russian leader Vladimir Putin and his aides and the U.S. team of special envoy Steve Witkoff and Trump advisor Jared Kushner. An aide to Putin saying the talks in Moscow were very useful, but a compromise option was not found. He added the work will continue. The U.S. team has not yet commented on those discussions, which are aimed at ending the three and a half year war between Russia and Ukraine. And Mark Mayfield tells us the president is announcing Trump Accounts, a saving initiative for America's children.
Trump says every American child born during his second term will receive a $1,000 government deposit to help start their account. Dell Technologies founder and CEO Michael Dell and his wife Susan joined the president for the announcement to talk about the $6.52 billion donation that they are making to the program. Financial experts say that Trump's accounts amount basically to an IRA for kids. The accounts were established through the passage of Trump's Big Beautiful Bill, signed into law in July. I'm Mark Mayfield.
The FBI investigating an apparent attack on federal immigration agents in San Antonio. They say an envelope containing a suspicious powder was mailed to an ICE investigations office. The building was evacuated due to an abundance of caution, officials say. An ICE spokesperson also saying it was a blatant attempt to disrupt ICE operations and endanger personnel. Daniel Martindale tells us two men who attended a child's birthday party that became the site of that deadly mass shooting in Stockton are now in custody.
The California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation says the two men in their 20s are accused of violating their parole. Both men are in San Joaquin County Jail, but are not considered shooters in the deadly incident. One of the men was previously found guilty of carrying a loaded firearm in public while being an active gang member. The other man did prison time for abusing and endangering the health of a child and for corporal injury on a person resulting in a traumatic condition. Saturday night's shooting at a banquet hall left four people dead, including three children, and wounded 11 others. I'm Daniel Martin. Dale.
Meanwhile, Michael Tubbs, who served as a mayor of Stockton, California from 2017 to 2021, is also speaking out about the tragic weekend shootings, again, that left four dead and 11 others hurt at that child's birthday party. Tubbs saying the city needs a full-scale intervention.
We know that in the state, but particularly in Stockton, we have a problem with gangs, groups, sets, cliques of disconnected, disenfranchised young men. Oftentimes choose to live lives of violence that have impacts on the entire community.
He says there needs to be a strategies employed to make sure the community is safe. He's running for lieutenant governor next year. And charges against a Northern California mall shooter are up in the air. Potential charges against a 17-year-old arrested for a triple shooting at Valley Fair Mall in the San Jose area are quite broad, including being charged as an adult.
The options in terms of time are anywhere from the rest of his life in adult prison to, you know, a couple months at the juvenile ranch or at the juvenile hall.
That's Santa Clara County's District Attorney Jeff Rosen. The shooting happened on Black Friday and stemmed apparently from a conflict between two different groups. One of the victims was believed to be a rival gang member, along with two innocent bystanders. The suspect, already on probation, was arrested late Sunday, as well as a woman who apparently assisted in his escape. Charges are expected to be filed today. And Michael Kastner tells us about a new study showing more negative mental health impacts a smartphone can have on preteens.
The American Academy of Pediatrics finds preteens who own a smartphone and use it regularly are at greater risk of depression, obesity, and insufficient sleep. The preteens had a 31% greater chance of suffering from depression and 62% greater chance of struggling with their sleep. The study looked at 10,000 children, comparing those who had a smartphone before age 12 and those who got their first phone when they were older. I'm Michael Kastner.
And YouTube says the upcoming social media ban in Australia will make children less safe. On December 10th, Australia will become the first country in the world to ban children under the age of 16 from using platforms including YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. The Australian government says it's protecting children from predatory algorithms. Under the ban, Australian children will still be able to visit YouTube, but without an account. A YouTube spokesperson says users without an account will lose access to the platform's safety filters and well-being settings, and they say that's what's going to make Australian kids less safe. The unofficial start of the holiday shopping season is proving to be successful, to say the least. MasterCard shows a 4% hike in spending this Black Friday compared to last year, with retailers racking in nearly $12 billion in online sales on Friday alone. But not everyone is taking part.
The Black Friday, it used to be really 50%, really 60%. Now you only see 30%, 40%.
Ridiculous. It's not worth it anymore. It's not what it used to be years ago. Those were sales, not now.
National Retail Federation, NOAA, predicts a record $1 trillion in holiday spending this year, up from $976 billion last year. And state's attorneys general from all 50 states have announced a settlement with Google in a lawsuit over Play Store misconduct. Here's Tammy Trujillo.
The lawsuit accused Google of monopolizing app distribution and in-app payment processing for Android phones. The settlement will see Google pay $630 million in restitution to consumers who were harmed by Google's anti-competitive practices when they made purchases on the Play Store between August of 2016 and September of 2023. Automatic payments to eligible consumers will be made through PayPal or Venmo. The settlement also calls on Google to reform its business practices. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
And I'm Teresa Tomio. It's a Wednesday morning. It's December 3rd, 2025. Great to be with you here on the second hour of Catholic Connection, EWTN's Radio Extra. Coming up, as we mentioned, we have a question for you. Do you believe in miracles? And what do you think of today's gospel? How are those two related, as well as some comments from the Holy Father? We shall explain in T's Two Cents coming up right after the break. Hope you're having a great Wednesday. 16 minutes past the hour, Catholic Connection on EWTN's Radio Extra, hour number two. And hopefully you're listening to hour number one, where Joan Lewis and I from Joan's Rome, we're discussing the Holy Father's historic apostolic trip to Turkey and Lebanon, and a great press briefing he had on the papal plane back to FCO Fiumicino, Leonardo da Vinci Airport in Rome, where he discussed a number of topics with a variety of different reporters. I think there were close to 100 reporters on the plane, and it was a very international representation of media from all around the world. And it was really interesting and uplifting to watch and, you know, to listen to it and his encouraging words. One of the questions came from, and this ties in with our subject matter today regarding miracles and, you know, believing that God has a plan for us and really understanding what he says in Scripture and embracing it. So there's a woman who's retiring, and she's from Catholic News Service, and she wanted to hear more about how he felt during the conclave. I'm reading an article, by the way, for this from Alatia, which is alatia.org, another great Catholic resource. The question was asked by Cindy Wooden, an American from Catholic News Service who's going to be retiring soon. This gave the Pope a chance to answer with humor. Well, my first comment would be that just a year or two ago, I too thought about retiring someday. You have received that gift of retirement, apparently. Some of us will continue to work. He went on to say that he believes very strictly about the secret of the conclave. But he did reveal that his attitude before the vote and even during it was, everything is in the hands of God, and I believe that profoundly. He talked about the fact that he really had to turn it over when he was realizing that he was one of the candidates. And he says, in the midst of great challenges, living in Peru during years of terrorism, being called to service in places where I never thought I would be called to serve, I trust in God. And that message is something that I share with all people. And then he goes on to say, so what was it like in the conclave? I resigned myself to the fact that when I saw how things were going, and I thought that this could be a reality, I took a deep breath. I said, here we go, Lord. You're in charge. You lead the way. Here we go, Lord. You're in charge. You lead the way. Those simple lines, I think, are two lines that we can take all the time to prayer. And we should be doing this because this is how we are giving ourselves over to the Lord. And I thought about his words this morning when Deacon Dom and I were doing the readings for today. Because we see in the beautiful gospel today, one of the gospels regarding the multiplication of the fishes and the loaves. And it has to do right with this miracle. This one is from Matthew 15:29-37. Let me share it with you if you didn't do your readings yet. At that time, Jesus walked by the Sea of Galilee, went up on the mountain and sat down there. Great crowds came to see him, having with them the lame, the blind, the deformed, the mute, and many others. They placed him at his feet and he cured them. The crowds were amazed when they saw the mute speaking, the deformed made whole, the lame walking, and the blind able to see. And they glorified the God of Israel. Jesus summoned his disciples and said, my heart is moved with pity for the crowd. They have been with me now for 3 days and have nothing to eat. I do not want to send them away hungry, for fear they may collapse on the way. The disciples said to him, where could we ever get enough bread in this deserted place to satisfy such a crowd? And Jesus said to them, how many loaves do you have? 7, they replied, and a few fish. He ordered the crowd to sit down on the ground. Then he took the 7 loaves and the fish, gave thanks, broke the loaves, and gave them to the disciples, who in turn gave them to the crowds. They all ate and were satisfied. They picked up the fragments left over, 7 baskets full. Okay. Now, what does this have to do with what the Pope said about putting it in the hands of God, trusting in God? Do we trust enough to believe the miracles? Well, unfortunately, there are many people, even in positions of teaching and preaching, that do not believe in the miracles and try to explain them away. And this is one of those gospels. How many of you have been disappointed to hear a deacon or a priest at some point in your Catholic life talk about this particular miracle, the loaves and the fishes, also known as the feeding of the 5,000, as nothing more than a very nice picnic of people sharing? It was a moment of sharing. They all took out their bread and whenever they had their cheese from their coolers, apparently, their picnic baskets, and their backpacks, and shared the food. Though not only is that really ridiculous, if you go back to the scripture and look at the words in the gospel, where Jesus says they've been here for 3 days, so that were they carrying enough food? If what these other folks who don't want to believe in the miracle of the loaves and the fishes, they have to really kind of twist and be like a pretzel to make this work. Because Jesus is recognizing that they've been there for a while and haven't had anything to eat. So thinking that it was a picnic where they were sharing what they had doesn't make any sense. It's the opposite of what Jesus is saying. And it really is so sad to me that we can't be more like the Holy Father and trust God. Here we go, Lord, you're in charge. Especially when you think about the importance of this miracle. It is the only one besides the resurrection that is mentioned in all four Gospels. What I just read you today, Matthew 14, also in Mark 6, Luke 9, and John 6. Okay? And it's super important. Now, there's nothing wrong with saying that this is an opportunity, for example, for people to learn how to teach. For example, Jesus gave the responsibility to, once he performed a miracle, to the apostles to share the food and to collect it afterwards, and nothing was wasted. So that's a good thing. A simple Google search will result in the importance of this miracle. The miracle holds profound significance in Christian teachings. It illustrates Jesus' compassion for the needy and his ability to provide abundantly from seemingly insufficient resources. The event emphasizes the importance of faith and reliance on divine provision rather than human limitations. Saying it was a picnic and people were sharing puts it on the human beings and our limitations. It's like, oh, I've got a little food. We're going to share it with everybody. This is going to be such a great moment. But do we really think that a picnic and a sharing warrants mentions in four Gospels? If it were not miraculous, why would it be told over and over and over again? Okay? And many scholars actually believe the actual number of people fed could have been between 15,000 to 20,000 when including women and children. So the miracle does teach us several lessons. Faith in action. Okay, that's great. Disciples were challenged to act on their faith despite the apparent lack of resources. Divine provision highlights God can multiply our small offering to meet great needs. And compassion. Jesus' actions, of course, reflect the importance of caring for others, especially those in need. The miracle continues to inspire and teach lessons about faith, compassion, and, most importantly, the power of God to provide the needs for his people. So as the Pope said when he was talking about how he felt during the conclave and the opportunity to that was coming his way, possibly, that he could actually be the Pope, you know, what did he say? Let me read it again. So what was it like in the conclave? I resigned myself to the fact when I saw how things were going and I said this could be a reality. I took a deep breath. I said, here we go, Lord. You're in charge. You lead the way. It's called surrender. Surrendering to God. Surrendering to his will versus our will. And knowing that all things are possible with God, as it says also in Scripture. My mother used to say, offer it up to God and put it at the foot of the cross. It's not that we go blindly, that God doesn't give us a brain to think about things and to pray, but it does mean that we have to have a strong belief in Jesus, that he is who he says he is. Here we go, Lord. You're in charge. You lead the way. Miracle after miracle, if only we believe. We'll be right back. Know how just a kind effort, a smile, a kind word, a letter, a note, a card is going to impact people. And the Lord tells us that he wants an open heart. And doing something very simple can make all the difference. I heard once, many, many years ago, that God loves us right where we're at, but he loves us too much to leave us there. That's why it's important for us to go forward every day with the confidence that we know God does the saving, but we have to be his hands and feet. That's why I love this story. I'm reading a headline from thefederalist.com, and it's dated just a few days ago, December 1st. Pro-life nuns join an effort to send Christmas cards to every abortion facilitator in the country. On the phone to talk with us about this beautiful effort is our dear friend and pro-life warrior, Abby Johnson from And Then There Were None. Of course, you know her unbelievable book, which is fantastic, and the movie that was named after the book with the same story, of course, Abby's story, of course, Unplanned. Abby, happy Advent, my dear. Always great to talk with you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
What a story. Okay, so tell us how this all developed.
Sure. So when I worked at the clinic, and this was not, I mean, this was, I left not, I mean, too long after this happened. So there was a religious sister named Sister Marie Bernadette who came out to our abortion facility. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, Teresa. This was the first time I had ever seen a religious sister out in the wild. Okay, I have never seen that before in my life. And so, I mean, I had seen, of course, like nuns on, you know, movies and things like that, but I had just never seen a full habit nun out in public before. Hmm. And here she was. I remember it was, I mean, 100 degrees outside that day. She was in a Franciscan habit outside. I remember her face was so red. It was so hot outside. And there was something different about her standing out there praying. And I couldn't stop staring at her. I could not stop watching her outside. And it was like all of a sudden I could feel my conscience again. Ooh. That had been numbed for so long. And I remember the first patient of the day drove out of the clinic and she was standing on the sidewalk, and I remember she just fell to her knees weeping.
Really? Wow.
And I thought, oh my gosh, she feels this pain of this loss in a way that I don't even comprehend anymore. I don't feel this in the same way. And it did something to me. I think that was it. I don't know, this callus that had formed around my heart. I think that was one of the first openings. I think that was one of the first breaks in this callus around my heart. And, you know, our ministry is called And Then There Were None. And we always kind of joked, like, and then there were nuns. You know, how could we work with nuns? How could we work with these religious sisters around the country? And we have a very robust handwritten card ministry where we have sweet women who we have a very comprehensive database of all of the abortion facilities that we keep updated across the country. And we reached out to some convents around the country and we said, would you be interested in writing handwritten notes to abortion clinic workers? And we had some respond and say, we would absolutely be honored and blessed to do that. And so that's what they do. So at Christmas time during Advent, they write a group of nuns. They write handwritten letters into every abortion clinic across the country. And I have to tell you, Teresa, we have had workers leave because of the notes that they have received from these sisters. And they remember them. They remember what was in the card. It's the first, you know, for most of these workers, this is the first correspondence that they have ever received from a religious sister.
Wow.
And the words that are written down are so profound, and they know that they're written with prayer behind them. And these sisters, they take them to the altar with the Blessed Sacrament. They are blessed. They are prayed over. And amazing, miraculous things are done because of this ministry.
This is so powerful. Talking with Abby Johnson, And Then There Were None. And now we're talking about And Then There Were Nuns. M-U-N-S, as Abby said, a very powerful story of witnessing to the workers inside the abortion facilities, which is what Abby's ministry is all about. But this is very unique as these sisters are participating. Abby, I think it's beautiful that they decided we're going to put the address of the convent as the return address, because previously they had had some cards that might be tossed in the garbage because if the workers see that it's from a pro-life group, they're not going to pay any attention to it. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea that some of the words that were shared? Can you kind of give us an example of what's written in the cards?
Yeah, I mean, some of the, you know, they have their own messages that they write. But, you know, they will say, we are praying for you daily. We are hopeful that you will turn to Christ. St. John Paul II said that that women are called to mother the world, that we are called to mother the world. And that may be biologically, yes, but it may be spiritually. And that's what these nuns are doing. They are mothering these clinic workers in a way that many of them have never been mothered before, in a spiritual way. They are reaching out to them in a spiritual motherhood and saying, repent from your sin and turn to Christ. Turn to the Blessed Mother. Turn to the ones who love you unconditionally. And that I can affirm that the majority of the workers who come to us come from broken homes. Mm-hmm. They themselves have been, most of them are single mothers. These are broken women. These are tired women. They feel unloved. And so to get a message from a woman who says, I love you. I genuinely love you. I love your soul. And Jesus wants to love you. He wants you to be his child forever, in eternity. It means something to them. It matters to them. And it matters enough so that they will reach out to us and say, you know what? I believe you. I believe that you do want to help me. This
Let's
letter
talk about that when we come back. We're
going to
take a break,
you.
Abby, and we're going to come right back because you have stories of women who have returned because of these beautiful handwritten notes from these sisters. More with Abby Johnson when we return. Stay tuned. You're listening to Catholic Connection. The simple effort of religious sisters sending postcards and Christmas cards can be a lifeline to workers feeling trapped and searching for a way out of the abortion industry. They serve as a reminder that there can be a new beginning in Jesus Christ. What I just shared with you, brothers and sisters, is the final paragraph in a beautiful story that has been posted on the Federalist, and it's all about the conversation we're having with pro-life warrior Abby Johnson, of course, from And Then There Were None, and her powerful book, Unplanned, a longtime pro-life minister. She's been on the front lines of the pro-life movement after leaving Planned Parenthood many years ago. And this is such a unique way to reach out to abortion workers, as she once was, as I mentioned, for many years. So we were talking during the break, Abby, that you have something like 20 convents that are involved in this beautiful effort.
And they're sending letters to over 800 facilities. So we need quite a few, responding and writing the letters. So it's a tremendous effort, but they're doing it, and they've been doing it for years now. So it is quite an undertaking.
What does it mean for you to see this kind of response to this as someone who worked inside an abortion facility for so many years?
It's truly a miracle. I mean, people ask me all the time, you know, Abby, what's it like? What's it like to be on the phone with someone as they're, you know, walking out of their clinic? You know, that moment. I mean, sometimes I'm on the phone with them as they're walking out the door that last day. And I tell people it's like witnessing a miracle, because it is. I've been with people, a lot of people are surprised to hear this, but if a clinic worker has a faith background, if they have a, you know, some sort of background, faith tradition, the majority of the time they are fallen away Catholics. And I have had the honor, the joy of being with many of these workers as they are going back to confession for the first time after working at a clinic. I've had the joy of being with them as they are returning to receive the Eucharist for the first time after leaving their clinic. It brings tears to my eyes every time I witness something that miraculous. And one of our staff members who's Protestant actually was with me one time when one of our workers went to confession for the first time after leaving the clinic. And she even said to me, she said, "Abby, she looks physically different after leaving confession." And I said, "Well, can you imagine sitting in the presence of Christ, telling him your sins, and feeling free from that burden?" That's what she just did. And that's what we get to witness all the time. I mean, that's what we get to witness weekly. And it's such a joy-filled experience to see these efforts, right? These efforts from these handwritten cards, the efforts from the mailers that we send in, the phone calls we make, the healing retreats that we offer, the one-on-one, you know, licensed Christian counseling, all these things that we do, to see it bear fruit in the name of Christ, it's really the honor of my life. I mean, aside from being a wife and a mother, it's the most joyous thing that I get to be a part of.
You know what's so amazing, though, is this is such a simple thing, but it's so profound, because the article was just beautiful. And you're talking here about the fact that you choose a Christmas card with the Holy Family scene, and then the nuns write the handwritten notes inside. And just a simple Christmas card from a convent to an abortion mill, and it's having a profound impact in such a good way.
It is. It's the simple things, right? Mother Teresa said, do small things with great love. And we know that these sisters are writing these cards with such intense love, and then bringing them to the Blessed Sacrament, right? Laying them in front of Jesus Christ and saying, "Jesus, your will be done," right? And his will is being done. Even inside of an abortion facility, his will is being done, and women and men are walking out of these facilities. They're coming back to him so that they can hopefully spend eternal life with him. That is his will. That's his will for all of us, even those who are working inside of these horrific abortion facilities. That is his will.
So do you pick the cards every year, and how do you decide on the theme? Is it always a Holy Family scene?
It's always a Holy Family scene, because we want to remind these abortion workers, this is God's intention for the family, mother, father, child. And we want to remind them, not just, you know, this is a reminder because of course, what you're doing in the clinic, but also this is a reminder for you personally. This is God's intention for you personally. We just want to remind them of God's great love for them as well. It's not just about, I mean, for us, our work, of course, we want to shut down abortion facilities. Of course, and then there were none that's helped close down 58 abortion clinics. Of course, we want to close abortion clinics. Of course, we want to save babies. But our ultimate goal is to bring women and men into eternity with Christ. It's yes, saving babies, but really, it's saving souls, and it's bringing our culture from a culture of death into a culture of life. And we believe that our part of the puzzle in that is bringing people out of this culture of death, bringing them out of the abortion industry, And of course, there are going to be tremendous things that happen from that. Clinics are closed, babies are saved, all these things. But yeah, we do intentionally choose images of the Holy Family every year.
Yeah, well, speaking of images, the beautiful description you gave, and by the way, if you're just tuning in, we're talking, of course, to Abby Johnson from And Then There Were None, a powerful pro-life ministry working to get abortion workers outside those facilities and get healing. Your comments in this article on the Federalist were just beautiful, similar to what you said earlier, Abby. Johnson recalled her time working in a Planned Parenthood facility where a Franciscan nun prayed for her outside. Her steady, peaceful presence had a profound impact on me. There was no condemnation from her, only prayers. She served as a reminder to me that something much better was outside of the tall iron fence that was supposed to make me safe, but had started to feel more like a cage. Wow. Mm-hmm. And I think you mentioned the image of this sister, the image on the card. These visuals are really important. And I think it's testimony, you know, and you're a convert. So I think it's testimony, especially for me as a cradle Catholic, how beautiful it is to see a sister in a habit, how beautiful it is to see a priest proud to wear his collar. It's very important, I think.
Oh, it is very important. I've said this, I think, on your show, and I'll say it again. When sisters would be out in front of the clinic, when priests would be out in front of our facility, we would have women call and say, "Can you tell me when the nun is going to leave? Can you tell me when the priest is going to leave? Because I can't come in when they're there." You know, that habit, that collar, that is a physical sign of our inward conscience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they will not come in when these priests, when these nuns are out there. These women will not come in, and many of them will not. And, you know, you see women coming into these, you've seen it, women coming in, they've got rosaries hanging around their rearview mirror, they've got some sort of religious article sticker on their car.
Right.
These are Christian women going in to have abortions. And so the more that we are outside of these facilities, praying our rosaries, showing up with our Bibles, showing up with our priests and our nuns, it makes a huge impact on the women and the men walking in.
In terms of the faith of the people working in the clinics, the article is saying that many of them have faith. Did you find that to be true when you were working at Planned Parenthood?
Yes. Two of the women that I worked with were, every Sunday Eucharist receiving mass goers. And the local pro-life organization had alerted their local priest that they worked at Planned Parenthood. And the priest had said to the pro-life group, "Well, that's on their soul, that's on their conscience," which is entirely untrue. Mm-hmm. The priest has responsibility in that as
right.
well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important that that the priest take responsibility in this as well, especially if they know those women needed to be ministered to by their Catholic priest who was giving them the Eucharist every week. Most of the women that work in the clinics, they do consider themselves Christians. And the abortion clinics love that, by the way. That is why they tout these, clergy for choice groups. That's mm-hmm. why when they have a groundbreaking, they have, these ministers and callers out there, because they want to, it's like Dr. Bernard Nathanson said. He said, "We knew that abortion would catch on like wildfire if the American Christian Church would remain silent."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They want abortion in the pews. They want abortion in the church. That is why we must be so vocal opponents in our churches, from the pulpits, in our pews.
But the way you did this in so many things, what you do, you're very strong and very vocal. But this, to me, is another way, and it's a very gentle but powerful way at the same time. In addition to everything you just said, right?
Yes. I mean, we can't always be in people's faces. We can't be that clanging gong, right? We must do it in a way that we have to temper truth with grace. And this is a way to gently remind people that they are loved, that they are valuable, And I think we do that with women, too, who are having, you know, who are considering abortion. We show them truth. We show them grace. We show them compassion. If people don't think their own life is valuable, why would they think the life in the womb is valuable?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really where we are in our society right now. People don't think their own life is valuable. And so, you know, trying to show people their humanity matters as well. And that's really what the abortion industry is all about. It's about dehumanization. So bringing back some humanity to not only the child in the womb, but the mother who's having the abortion, and the abortion worker themselves, the abortion doctor, the abortion nurse. Rehumanizing everyone involved in the abortion process is very, very important.
Yeah. Well, Abby, you're doing so much great work. Thank you so much for sharing this beautiful story with us. And I want to encourage people to read the article in the Federalist, but also go to this really important website, abortionworker.com, abortionworker.com, Abby's ministry, and Then There Were None. Merry Christmas, my dear sister. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much, Teresa.
Yeah, it's always good to catch up with you. And what a story. And just there's so many things we could talk about. But how important to love people where they're at and for these sisters to get together and to take those cards and put them before Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament. Amazing. What God can do with our yes. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. I don't know about you, but that I'm just so moved by that whole effort that Abby's ministry is doing. When I first saw the headline, I sent it to my associate producer, Deborah, right away. I thought, wow, how beautiful. Again, you never know where people are, so don't assume anything. Just be Jesus to them and be kind and be loving. Does it mean that, you know, we suppress our Catholic beliefs? It's just the opposite, because you're not going to win people over, as Abby said, by, you know, clanging and screaming and pounding them over the head with the Bible and the catechism. Doesn't work. Doesn't mean, again, that we weaken the truth of the faith. No. But when people have questions, we are there with the answers. But it has to start with the relationship. It has to start with love. Doesn't work any other way. Father John Ricardo talks about this all the time. Father Michael Schmitz, Father Mitch Pacwa, so many great priests and teachers mention this. It's got to start with a relationship to help them get into or back into a relationship with Jesus. So great talking to you today on a Wednesday. Tomorrow is a Thursday. Now, Father Mitch is still traveling overseas. He is in the Holy Land. What an opportunity. So he won't be with us tomorrow, but we are going to have all kinds of updated information for you on the news, on the latest from the Holy Father, and I do hope you can stay tuned. And again, remember the Advent resources we're sharing with you this first week of Advent. Tom Price was on with me yesterday talking about all of our great Advent programming. Go to ewtn.com/schedule/radio, then go to schedules. Of course, Father Mike Schmitz, ascensionpress.com. And we'll have more for you, of course, soon to come on Catholic Connection. Have a great Wednesday.